If you want to support the show, you can go to mwpnews.com/support, where you can pick up my latest book, Succession Planning, and all my other books that have previously been released on Kindle for only $2.99 each. Thank you. Good morning and welcome to 30 Minute Reviews. I am Adam. We have a packed week of news this week, so let's just get into it. We're going to start with a new segment we're going to be doing, which is big news and winners from the indie space, because I feel like there's not enough looks at what goes on in indie film, especially on the festival circuit, if it's not Cannes or Venice, and we're guilty of this too. But we're going to talk about some of the winners from film festivals that happened. So we're going to start out with South by Southwest, because South by Southwest wrapped up in March, and we have our winners from that. And I'm going to apologize for mispronouncing some of these things. I feel like I'm going to guaranteed do that. So let's get into the big winners. The Jury Award for Narrative Feature went to Bob Trevino Likes It, which is written and directed by Tracy Lehman. The Special Jury Award for Performance went to Maria Rodriguez Soto for Mama Farah. The Special Jury Award for Filmmaking went to Josephine Stewart Tae Woo for We Were Dangerous. The Jury Award for Documentary Feature went to Grand Theft Hamlet, written and directed by Penny Grills and Sam Crane. The Special Jury Award for Bravery and Empathy went to Karina Mia Wong and Alex Simmons for We Can Be Heroes. The Jury Award for Narrative Short went to Disillusion, written and directed by Anthony Sachs. The Special Jury Award for Narrative Short went to Sam Cutler-Crutz and David Cutler-Crutz for Trapped. The Jury Award for Documentary Short went to Remember Broken Crayons Color 2, written and directed by Shanette Clemmings and Ursa Kastelic. The Special Jury Award for Documentary Short went to David Galvey Herbert for Frank. The Jury Award for Midnight Short went to Transylvania, written and directed by Rodriguez Hart, written by Rodriguez Hart, David Alexander Kasson, and Axel Werstein. Jesus, I should have done a test of this first. The Special Jury Award for Midnight Short went to Eros 5 for Meat Puppet. The Jury Award for Animated Short went to Wander to Wonder, directed by Nina Gantz, written by Nina Gantz, Simon Cartwright, Dan Baker, and Stinette Boskloper. And the Special Jury Award for Animated Short went to, I jumped down too far, Bug Diner, Phoebe Jane Hart for Bug Diner. And we also have winners for the Audience Awards. The Headliner Audience Award went to Monkey Man, directed by Dave Patel, written by Dave Patel, Paul Anguanawella, and John Coley. The Audience Award for Narrative Fiction went to Bob Trevino Likes It, written and directed by Tracy Lehman. The Narrative Feature Audience Award went to Resonator, directed by Allison Tavell. The Narrative Spotlight Audience Award went to My Dead Friend Zoe, directed by Kyle Hausman Stokes, written by Kyle Hausman Stokes and AJ Bermudez. The Documentary Spotlight went to Clementi, directed by David Altrogue, which I probably mispronounced. The Midnighter went to Oddly, written and directed by Damian McCarthy. And the Festival Favorite went to Sing Sing, directed by David Quidar, written by Clint Bentley and Greg Cudar. Monkey Man is out in theaters now. Sing Sing is an A24 release that is slated for release this July. It premiered at Toronto last year. We do not have a distributor yet for Bob Trevino Likes It, and Legion M produced My Dead Friend Zoe, which could indicate a limited theatrical release is coming in the near future, because Legion M has partnered with people like Kevin Smith, and recently that documentary about William Shatner, and also Clementi, I feel like will get picked up by Amazon. That's just how I feel. Of note, wrapping up this weekend, we have the Annapolis Film Festival in Annapolis, Maryland, and the Overlook Film Festival in New Orleans. The Phoenix Film Festival will be continuing on this week through April 14th, and that is in Phoenix, Arizona. On to this week's big stories. Story number one, Disney holds steady and defeats Nelson Peltz in this proxy fight. For those who don't know, Disney's been in the middle of a massive proxy war, one of the most expensive in history, over the last few months, as activist investor Nelson Peltz launched an all-out blitz against the current board in an effort to become a dissenting vote to keep Bob Iger and the rest of the board in check. This week, this finally came to a head with the shareholders voting on who should stay on the board, and this was an indictment of Peltz, who was voted out, not voted out, but not voted in, following a few high-profile endorsements for Iger. Now, I think we talked about this with the woke comment. Peltz said that Disney is too woke, and that's part of the problem. And then the example he cited was like, well, why do we need a movie like the Marvels? Why do we need a movie like Black Panther? And it's like, well, I mean, you talk about three movies out of, several hundred, so like, not several hundred, several dozen. So I feel like that's, not fair, but whatever, it is what it is. And I think his comments on it being too woke came from the fact that some of the more chuddly aspects of the internet had jumped into the fight in a way that they hadn't before when Lucas stepped up and Eisner stepped up and endorsed Iger as CEO, George Lucas being George Lucas and Michael Eisner being the former CEO of Disney, stepped up and endorsed Iger as CEO and for the current board to stay intact. The worst aspects of what's it called, the worst aspects of like YouTube and the like came together and were like, oh, why is Lucas doing this? They killed his baby, what are they doing? And it's a, it was an interesting kind of moment to watch that come to a head of sorts, where it's like, how do we deal with this? How do we deal with, with this narrative that we've constructed, coming apart at the seams? And Peltz, I assume maybe not Peltz directly, but someone in his camp saw, oh shit, they're turning on Iger. This is a group that doesn't like Iger. We can use this to kind of grassroots astroturf our way to Iger being ousted and us getting our way in this. So all right, all of that happens and now, the vote happens and it fails and the board remains intact. And I think that the thing is too, a lot of the issues and Peltz did have not the woke point, but there were some other issues that Peltz did point out. The lack of succession planning that happened under Iger, where Chapek takes over and Chapek is kind of left in the situation that's not great. And Chapek took over in the pandemic or right before the pandemic. The issue is, it seemed like Iger was more focused on his own legacy when he left in 2019 than he was in the longevity of the company. And Chapek did not handle things well. And a lot of the issues that are attributed were things that began under Iger. The idea that Disney suddenly got invested in politics under Chapek is just simply not true, because they've always been politically active. I mean, Disney's a massive donor across the board, to various groups that and various politicians that are in their interests, regardless of where they stand on social issues. But then on top of that, Disney has not suddenly taken a social stance. Iger very clearly wore his politics on his sleeve. And to say that like Chapek getting involved with the Don't Say Gay was the straw that broke the camel's back, it's like, well, they were doing it long before that. It's just he handled the situation poorly. And the other issue was the massive investment in streaming that hasn't quite panned out. That wasn't entirely Chapek because like The Mandalorian premiered under Iger. And we got all the announcements for Phase 4 under Iger and all the Disney Plus shows for Marvel under Iger. So there's a lot that is getting attributed to Chapek, but a lot of it was Iger. But we did get some and look, had Peltz been serious in what he was saying about, Marvel being too woke and all of that, I think there was a legitimate chance of projects getting shelved. I think there was a legitimate chance that we never would have seen Ironheart. I think there's a legitimate chance we never would have seen New Jedi Order, and as things that Are these projects quote unquote too woke? Well, let's not release them because I don't think they're going to make money, even though time and time again, that's been proven false. At this point, things like the Marvels are an anomaly. Female-led movies make money. Non-people of color-led movies make money. The Marvels is an anomaly. After this, Disney did have a bit of a victory lap, and they made a few announcements. Toy Story 5 has been dated for tw July of 2026. The Amateur has been delayed until April of 2025. Night Bitch got locked into a December 6th, 2024 release date. Other previously announced movies got concrete release dates, including Tron: Ares, October 10th, 2025, and The Mandalorian and Grogu, as I predicted, May 22nd, 2026. The live-action remake of Moana has been pushed back to July 10th, 2026, presumably to give time between the release of Moana 2 and that to do it. I think this does paint a little bit of a dire picture for where Disney goes in the future, since of they have 10 major releases next year. 8 of them are based on existing IP. You have 4 Marvel Studios movies with Captain America 4, Fantastic Four, Thunderbolts, and Blade. You have the live action remake of Snow White. You have Tron: Ares. You have Avatar 3, and you have Zootopia 2. And it appears that Disney will be focusing more and more on existing IP rather than developing their own. It's important to remember that most of these things, when they originated, were risk. So taking a risk-averse model to building a film slate is misguided. I also would not be shocked if Disney were to delay Blade or Thunderbolts to give more space to these projects, and also it would allow them to delay what's it called? To delay Kang Dynasty a little bit, because we still don't have any word, and we're 2 years out now almost from Avengers 5. I would not be shocked if that got delayed too. A lot of these announcements would be contingents on how confident they are in Deadpool and Wolverine, which will be debuting the same weekend as San Diego Comic-Con. And if the movie is going to do well, and they know it's going to do well, I think there's a solid chance that they use Hall H as a kind of reset moment. Worst case scenario, they hold off till D23, though. I do think Marvel does need to have a come to Jesus moment. They do need to have an opportunity to sit here and be like, look, we need to set the record straight and set straight where we're going. Otherwise, you're kind of just stuck in the situation where people who don't have the faith and confidence in Marvel Studios are just going to continue to not have that confidence. We need to have Marvel come out and be like, here's what we're doing, here's what's happening, this is what our release is going to be, and this is what we're sticking to. Here's the creative teams, here's everything that's going along with it. Let's just move on. And I think without that, there's going to be a little bit of issue with where Marvel goes in the future. Sticking with Marvel story number two, Julia Gardner has joined the MCU. Julia Gardner of Inventing Anna has joined as the Silver Surfer in the upcoming Fantastic Four movie. To be clear, she is not playing Norrin Radd, a gender-bent version of Norrin Radd. She's playing Shalla Bal. This is not the first appearance of Shalla Bal as a character. Since she's been intertwined with the story of Norrin Radd since 1968, and with a major recurring character in the animated Silver Surfer show that aired on Fox in 1998 after X-Men did its run. This should come as no surprise to people who have watched Marvel Studios' approach to date when adapting the characters who have already been adapted to screen in recent years. Captain Marvel, for example, had her backstory slightly modified to be tied to the Tesseract, and used a amnesia storyline to avoid an exposition dump that ends up looking similar to Hal Jordan after the release of Green Lantern. Until Spider-Man No Way Home, there was a conscious decision to not use characters that were previously adapted the other Spider-Man villains, which is why we got Vulture and Mephisto in those two movies, because it is more about they don't want to use characters that have already been adapted. So if we're going to get Galactus, we got Norrin Radd and Galactus in Fantastic Four: Rise of the Silver Surfer. So they would use someone else as the what's it called? As the Herald Galactus in that movie. It's also worth noting that there are rumors, and we don't like reporting on rumors, but we are going to report on one here, that this takes place in an alternate universe. This does not take place in the MCU proper, the 616-199-9999 proper. This takes place in an alternate universe. So if that's the case, and we did get some confirmation of this, a little bit of confirmation of this, where it has that kind of retro-futurist aesthetic that we get that we see a little bit of in that what's it called, in that new poster they put out on 4-4. The idea that if this is an alternate universe, considering that Norrin Rad became the Herald of Galactus in his original run to save his planet and save his lover, Shalabel, it would make sense that if you're doing an alternate universe storyline, you twist it a little bit like What If, and you do, well, what if she was the one who made that sacrifice instead of Norrin Rad? Plus, it lets you build Norrin Rad as something cool that could come down the line. So I'm a big fan of this decision in a few for a few reasons. Plus, Julia Garner's a great actress. Story number three, Gunn may have found a director for Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. This has not been concretely confirmed by Gunn, but there are reports from The Hollywood Reporter and Deadline that a director has been found for Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. According to these reports, Craig Gillespie will be upcoming the upcoming film, will be directing the upcoming film based on Tom King's more famous run that happened recently. He's got an interesting range of films, considering he recently directed Cruella, Dumb Money, and I, Tonya. But in the past, he's also done films like The Finest Hours for Disney, Mr. Woodcock, and Million Dollar Arm, also for Disney. I have mixed feelings on this. Gillespie has shown himself to be able to handle female leads very well with Cruella and I, Tonya. Considering how few opportunities there are for big budget female-led films, I'd have thought we moved past having male directors take these limited opportunities. On top of that, I'm not thrilled about the fact that Supergirl has already been cast. We know that Millie Alcock from House of the Dragon will be playing the role in Superman, and we know that the person who's directing this film is going to be jumping in and playing with someone else's toys, so to speak. When we look at, when we compare the DCU to the MCU, one of the things that the MCU did, and people will criticize, we'll say I'm wrong about this, but I don't care. I firmly believe this way. Each sub-franchise within the MCU has an identity. Each sub-franchise within the MCU had its own visual look, feel, style, all that jazz. And the reason why that's good is, like, you can watch Doctor Strange movie and it looks and feels differently from Iron Man. It looks and feels different from Captain America. It looks and feels different from Ant-Man. And the point of this is each sub-franchise has its own identity. If we're going to have Gunn bring someone in to a system like this, I don't know how much of that's going to carry over. And it seems like we're going to get more of it. And considering how much of Phase 1 or Chapter 1 of the DCU is being originated in Superman, I'm a little hesitant to look at this and be like, oh, this is a potential good thing. Story number four, we have news that there is a fifth Matrix in development. This time it is coming from acclaimed science fiction director Drew Goddard. Lana Wachowski is also going to be on as an executive producer. It is reassuring that Warner Brothers' announcement for this says that Drew Goddard went to WB with the pitch. Although it's unclear if this is solicited, considering where the fourth movie left off. It has been deemed a bomb, The Matrix Resurrections, with $157 million across $190 million budget. It's worth noting this was released in 2021 when Warner Brothers was releasing their movies on the same day on HBO Max to watch at home. That said, for the studio, it was the sixth highest grossing, behind Godzilla vs. Kong at $470 million. Dune Part 1 at $402 million, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It at $206 million, The Suicide Squad at $168 million, Space Jam: A New Legacy at $163 million, and then Matrix Resurrections at $157 million. It's also worth noting that Matrix Resurrections debuted the week after No Way Home, which is a theatrical exclusive that went on to be number 7 highest grossing of all time at the box office, which almost certainly took a huge bite out of Matrix Resurrections because viewer would have to go to see No Way Home in a theater while they could watch Resurrections at home. So we'll see what comes of this. Story number five, Dune Messiah is officially in development at Legendary. This is wrapped into an announcement that Villeneuve had signed a new deal to adapt Nuclear War, a Scenario, as his project after Messiah. Messiah was originally published in 1969 and follows Paul Atreides 12 years after the events of Dune as he struggles to maintain control of the Empire as he, wow. I'm reading my own copy that I wrote this morning. As he struggles to maintain his control as Emperor of the Known Universe, while the Bene Gesserit, the Spacing Guild, and the Talaxu all work together to end his reign. As of right now, it is expected that the cast will reprise their role, including Timothée Chalamet, Zendaya, Florence Pugh, and a few others. The announcement also seems to indicate that Villeneuve's involvement with the Dune franchise will end with Messiah, and should Warner Bros. And Legendary move forward with Children of Dune or God Emperor, they will do so with a new creative team. This week at the box office, Godzilla and Kong: The New Empire maintained the number one slot with 31.7 million. Monkey Man came in at number two with 10.2 million. Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire opened at 9 million. The First Omen opened at 8.3 million, and Kung Fu Panda holds on at 7.8 million at number five. Dune Part Two has fallen out of the top five for the first time since its release over a month ago. Coming to theaters this week, we have Alex Garland's speculative fiction piece, Civil War, starring Kristen Dunst, Wagner Mora, Kaylee Spaney, and Jesse Plemons, in a movie about a fictional American Civil War set in the near future. This is A24's most expensive movie to date, and it's currently sitting at a 93 on Rotten Tomatoes. Also this week is a horror film called Sting from writer-director Kaya Roche Turner. It's a monster movie about a pet spider that turns into a flesh-eating monster. It is currently sitting at a 77 on Rotten Tomatoes. Coming this week to physical media, we have the final season of the DC Universe HBO Max original series, Doom Patrol, the DVD and Blu-ray, alongside Night Swim, which came out in January, starring Wyatt Russell and Kerry Condon, and the dark comedy Lisa Frankenstein, directed by Zelda Williams, starring Catherine Newton and Cole Sprouse. As for this week in podcasts, what else can you expect to listen to? Here on Tuesday on the Backlog Files, we'll be covering Pokemon Fire Red and Leaf Green. On Wednesday, on Exploring Hyperspace Lanes, we'll be covering the new remasters of Star Wars Battlefront 1 and Battlefront 2. On Thursday, Beware of Spoilers, we'll be covering The Bad Batch Episode 12. In the morning on Friday, Beware of Spoilers, we'll be covering X-Men 97 Episode 5. In the evening on Friday, we'll be covering Civil War on Beware of Spoilers. On Saturday, we'll be covering The Girls on the Bus Episode 6. On Sunday, we'll be covering Fallout from Amazon Prime, both of those on Beware of Spoilers. And then on Monday, 30-minute reviews, we will be covering all the big news out of CinemaCon in a special episode. As always, you can subscribe on our website, MWPnews.com, or on podcast feeds for all these podcasts to get these direct to you every day. We have an announcement to make. Where we are working on our schedule for the summer and the back half of the year. We like to highlight independent films and smaller releases here, not just the big major studio releases. So we do have a plan for some festivals that we do intend to go to. We will hopefully have a presence at all of the following festivals: Tribeca Film Festival, Brooklyn Film Festival, Long Island International Film Expo, Stony Brook Film Festival, Hamptons International Film Fe Festival, and the New York Film Festival. Additionally, we may have special reporting from one additional festival as I work out terms with the person involved, and one major trade show coming later this year. And we'll wrap up there for today. If you're listening to this on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or I believe Thursday too, let me take a look at the calendar real quick. You will be able to pick up a copy of my most recent book, Succession Planning, for free on Kindle devices. That is completely for free, no strings attached. Just go to MWPnews.com. It should be the pinned story, as long as it's the pinned story and up on the site. This will be available for free. You can read an excerpt before you add it to your library. But we'll wrap up there for today, and until our next episode, have a great rest of your week.